Greetings, friends, fellow patriots, fellow citizens, and even non-citizens, and welcome to this week's edition of the We the People Convention News and Opinion podcast on this beautiful spring day from Northeast Ohio. My name is Tom Zawistowski. I'm the host of this podcast, and I'm also the president of the We the People Convention. And this podcast and everything we do is paid for by the generous donors to the We the People Convention, who pay for our website, our text messages, our emails, our phone app, our donations to other conservative groups, our trips and events that we put on. So thank you to all of you who support our efforts and help us fight for our individual freedom, liberty, and prosperity. For those of you who are new to the podcast, this is a news aggregation show. We take the information that's been spewed out this week, most of which is propaganda, fight through that to find truth that affects your individual freedom, liberty, and prosperity. And then we ask you to act in defense of your individual freedom and liberty and prosperity by calling your representatives, taking actions at your local schools, all kinds of different things. Okay. So we're going to talk a lot about what's going on, but we're also going to take action. And that's why you watch this podcast. Those of you who've been watching for a long time know that. So we're going to get after it because I'm very excited about this week's show. We've got some really good stories, and I want to get after it. So let's get going. As you can see, our flag is still hanging upside down. All right. That is not a disrespect to our nation or our flag. It is a warning to our fellow citizens that we are in danger to life and property, and that they need to wake up and understand that we are under attack by communist China, which is basically trying to destroy us to take over the world. Whatever you see going on in the United States, whether it's these Palestinian protests, support anti-Israel protests, whether it's Black Lives Matter, whether it's Antifa, whether it's transgenderism, all of that is paid for and sponsored and is an attack by the communist Chinese on the United States. You don't believe me? Go to wethepeopleconvention.org. Search on the article we just put up a couple weeks ago about how two Chinese billionaires have funded the entire trans movement in the United States since the beginning. You'll also be able to click on other articles from that article that show that James Comer, the head of the House committee investigating, an infiltration of the Chinese into the United States government, says they have infiltrated all of it. Okay, so don't doubt me. We've got the receipts, and I'm going to bring you some more receipts in this podcast of where China is manipulating our government for their benefit and for our detriment. Just a fact. Those of you who watch the podcast all the time know that we never forget the January 6th political prisoners. Well, why? Because they are the canary in the coal mine. They represent what's wrong with our nation. They represent the tyranny that we are under, that we have Marxists running our government who have suspended the rule of law and are basically persecuting, not prosecuting, people who resisted them. And it's not just the January 6th prisoners. As you know, Donald Trump is the one that's suffering the most. And we'll talk more about that later. But it's real simple. Until the January 6th political prisoners are released, they are pardoned, they are given restitution, and the people who did this to them are charged with the abuse of the law that they've done, and we're going to talk about that in a minute, we will not be the United States of America again. We don't want revenge. We want the equal application of the law, okay? That's what we want, because that's what makes America different from every other place. We, our founding fathers, made us a nation ruled by law, not by men. Every other nation in the history of the world was run by a king, a dictator, whatever, until the United States. They're trying to take that away. And we, right now, you and I, are being ruled by men and women, tyrannical Marxist men and women who hate America and are using the law to destroy America and destroy those of us who defend America so that they can rule the world and make us all slaves. So if you're new to the podcast, okay, let's just get it clear here. This isn't about Republicans and Democrats. It's not about conservatives and liberals and leftists. This is about individual freedom and liberty, your right and my right to decide how I live, okay, versus the state control of communism, of Marxism, of tyranny, where you are just a tool of the state. You are there to serve the state, your rulers. That's what we're fighting. That's the war. That's why this election year is so critical, because they are already, you know, pushing every way they can to enslave us, to take away our individual rights, to free speech, to our Second Amendment, to everything else. And if we don't push back at the ballot box this year, well, we're going to push it back in a way you don't want to push back, but you're going to have to, or you're going to be a slave. It's that simple. So we always say a prayer for the January 6th political prisoners, and I ask you to join me right now and just remember, ask God to give them strength and courage to get through this ordeal in prison, and to give their families strength and courage to stay with their loved ones, not abandon them, and that their lawyers get the guidance they need to help defend them. Join me in a quick prayer. Thank you very, very much. Very, very much. And we've got news, big news, about the January 6th. And it came in the form of the hearings that were held, the arguments that were made this week in the Supreme Court concerning the this law that's being abused by the DOJ, which is obstruction of an official proceeding. 5 of the 9 Supreme Court justices appeared skeptical of the government's use of obstruction of an official proceedings law against January 6th political prisoners during this week's arguments. Conservative Supreme Court justices seemed generally sympathetic on April 16th to former police officer charged under an accounting reform law after he entered the U.S. Capitol for 4 minutes on January 6th, 2021. The case is being closely watched because once the Supreme Court rules, its decision could affect hundreds of January 6th prosecutions, including the January 6th related case against former President Donald Trump. The court's decision will be announced in July. Joseph Fisher from Jonestown, Pennsylvania, was indicted on several counts following the Capitol breach on January 6th, including obstruction of an official proceeding under the Enron-era election law, 18 U.S. Code 1512. Convictions in this section can lead to 20 years in prison. And that's the DOJ. That's why they're charging this. They want to take people who went into the Capitol for 4 minutes, didn't do any damage, okay, and they want to give them 20 years in prison. The legal experts, including Mr. Fisher's defense counsel, have criticized the Biden administration for prosecuting defendants, including President Trump, under the law, arguing it is an inappropriate vehicle for the prosecutions. Lawyers argue that the accounting reform law under which Mr. Fisher and others have been charged is being used by the Department of Justice to prosecute people who are exercising their First Amendment rights to protest the congressional certification of election results, which they felt were illegitimate. So I just want to quote you a couple things, and you can go to wethepeopleconvention.org and read the story, because there's quotes from the various Supreme Court justices. I'm just going to give you a few. Justice Neil Gorsuch asked if pulling a fire alarm to halt a proceeding would subject the offender to a 20-year prison term. This goes back to the Democrat House member who intentionally pulled the fire alarm in the U.S. House to stop a vote that the Democrats didn't want to pass. And then he claimed he was confused. No, it was total intent. If you want to charge someone with intent to interfere with an official proceeding, that SOB was guilty. You know what he got? He got a misdemeanor, no jail time, no nothing, okay? So then Gorsuch asked questions like, well, what about all the sit-ins at the Kavanaugh trial where Cory Booker and Kamala Harris held conference calls, organizational meetings, every day with the leftist mob to organize people coming in to the Senate hearing with intentions to stop it or postpone it or to disrupt it. How is that not the same case that they're charging the January 6th with? Were any of them charged? No. Were Booker and Kamala Harris charged? I argued at the time they should have been expelled from the Senate for intentionally interrupting the Supreme Court approval of a Supreme Court justice. My God, the double standards are unbelievable. Justice Samuel Alito asked if protesters obstructing a trial would violate the statute. For all the protests that have occurred in this court, the Justice Department has not charged any serious offenses, and I don't think any one of those protesters has been sentenced to even one day in prison. Why isn't that a violation of 1512C2? Yeah, why isn't that a violation? Well, the answer is because the DOJ wasn't persecuting the lefties. They wanted them to do those things. They want to stop you and I. So it looks very, very good. Very, very good that the judges are going to overturn this in July, and it's going to cause hundreds of the January 6th, you know, cases to be modified, their prison sentences reduced. It's just going to be a big, big deal. Okay? So keep up the fight. That's what it's all about. Keep up the fight. Now, this is also a January 6th related story, but it doesn't have to do with the political prisoners, but it's important. The January 6th committee, the bogus Pelosi committee that was only there to frame Donald Trump, lied about whether Trump ordered National Guard troops to defend the Capitol. They lied. And here's the proof. January 6th National Guard narrative about Trump to be dismantled by whistleblowers. On Wednesday, the whistleblowers will corroborate that Trump did, in fact, authorize the National Guard to mobilize to D.C. that day. On Wednesday, whistleblowers from the Washington, D.C. National Guard expected to tell Congress congressional investigators that former President Donald Trump wanted them deployed, but an Army Secretary, Ryan McCarthy, delayed relaying this to a D.C. National Guard Commander William Walker by at least 2 hours. According to the Daily Mail, at least three whistleblowers will also testify that their stories were ignored by the Democrat-led January 6th committee because it didn't fit their narrative. Their hearing will aim to further prove that acting SecDef Christopher Miller did give advance approval to deploy the National Guard at Trump's command. Instead of getting to the bottom of the breakdown of communications and focusing on improving military preparedness for future incidents, the witnesses feel the January 6th panel was solely focused on pinning blame for the events that day on Trump. The officers who were with Walker the day of the Capitol riots will detail how they were on buses in full tactical gear for hours waiting for the go-ahead from the Army. McCarthy stated under oath that he did give a timely order for the deployment of the D.C. National Guard, but Walker's troops said they found out about mobilizing during a press conference, which led to a 3-hour and 19-minute delay. Some have suggested that McCarthy was trying to intervene over the optics of the Army under his command, trying to inhibit or interfere with the certification of the 2020 presidential election results, and that he may have been vying for a spot in the upcoming Biden administration. Yeah, that's what the January 6th committee didn't tell the American people, right? We wouldn't want to put any evidence out that exonerates Donald Trump, would we? Because we want to keep going on with the lies and the show trials that about 40% of Americans believe. This is propaganda, folks. This is why we expose it. Have any of you guys heard that story? Yeah, it'll be linked on our podcast page. Share it with people who think Trump created the insurrection. Share it, okay? This is an amazing story that just popped up. You talk about going back to the Wayback Machine, okay? Because we covered this in great detail, but this is about Chinese interference in the elections. LA prosecutor on election software firm case claims charges were dropped over DA's political concerns. What is this about, right? Well, this is about Katherine Engelbrecht. This is about True the Vote. This is all about the firm in Michigan that, you know, had this Connect software that True the Vote found was directly connected to the Chinese government and was interfering with their election. And instead of putting the FBI putting the Chinese people in prison, they put Kathleen and Greg Phillips in prison, right? So let me just go over this. A lead prosecutor on a case involving the CEO of an election software company has filed a government tort complaint against Los Angeles County District Attorney George Casson, a Soros guy, for allegedly dismissing criminal charges improperly against the company executive for political purposes. The prosecution of the head of an election software company used by election offices across the country that began on October of 2022 was ended about a month later because the Los Angeles County District Attorney's concerns about his political image, according to lead prosecutor's complaints against the DA. On Wednesday, Eric Neff, a prosecutor in the Los Angeles County District Attorney's office, filed the lawsuits against the DA for allegedly improperly dismissing criminal charges against Eugene Yu, the founder and CEO of the Michigan-based electronic software company, Connect. The felony complaint also alleged that Connect employees sent personal identifying information of Los Angeles County election workers to third-party software developers in China who assisted with creating and fixing the company's Paul Chief software. In November of 2022, the DA, Gascon, dropped the criminal charges against Yu, citing concerns about both the pace of the investigation and potential bias in the presentation of charges. After the charges were dropped, the DA's office said it had assembled a new team with significant cybersecurity experience to determine whether any criminal activity occurred and engaged an independent expert to continue to review the evidence. However, no new charges were brought after that announcement. In his complaint filed Wednesday, Neff noted that following Yu's arrest, the former president, Donald Trump, had encouraged Gascon in his prosecution of the CEO. This is apparently concerning to Gascon, who is known for his progressive soft-on-crime policies. On or about October 7, 2022, DA Gascon was overwhelmingly concerned that since he had inadvertently gained Trump's support to look into this election interference, the outlook of such support by prosecuting Mr. Yu would impact his stance and popularity politically, according to Neff's complaint. In January, get this, in January, the Los Angeles County approved a $5 million settlement with Yu after he alleged the DA's office violated his rights in arresting and charging him in the criminal case, harming his reputation and his business. Are you kidding me? They paid this guy $5 million. During the board of a supervised meeting that approved the settlement, Neff asked about the investigation into Yu and Connect during public comments, saying, have all the investigations in this matter been completed? If so, have you read them in their entirety? Has county council read them? Are you aware of these findings? And if all internal investigations have not been completed, why is the government agreement being proposed to you now to pay them off? Holy cow! They never did the investigation. The evidence is clear. Kathryn Engelbrecht, in True the Vote, gave it to the FBI, gave it to the Los Angeles guy. They gave them the IP addresses of the servers in China that had the election information for like 26 counties in the United States. These guys are guilty of sin, but nobody, the FBI, the Los Angeles Department, you know, prosecutors, never investigated. That's the cover-up. That's when you hear all these people say, all these courts looked into the election interference charges and all dismissed them as unfounded. No, no, that's a lie. They never looked at the evidence because they didn't want to look at the evidence because they didn't want to know what we all know. The Chinese interfered with the election. They put Joe Biden in office, who they've given millions of dollars. They own Joe Biden, okay? This guy Neff, he's going to keep digging, and I think this case could get reopened. I sure hope so. Okay, enough of the January 6th, you know, election interference stuff. This is something that was really exciting, and you got to spread the word, This came out on Friday. Trump campaign RNC unveiled massive election integrity program. And folks, the word massive isn't being misused. This is really great news. The Republican National Committee, together with the Trump campaign, announced Friday, that's just yesterday, the launch of what they claim is the most extensive and monumental election integrity program in the nation's history. More than 100,000 volunteers and attorneys will work in each battleground state to ensure the 2024 elections are transparent and fair. Having the right people to count the ballots is just as important as turning over votes, turning out voters on Election Day, former President Donald Trump said in a statement. Republicans are now working together to protect the vote and ensure a big win on November 5th. You ain't kidding, man. This is serious. Listen to what he said. Whenever a ballot is being cast or counted, Republican poll watchers will be observing the process and reporting any irregularity. In the event of an irregularity or problem, RNC lawyers and volunteer attorneys that they have coordinated will provide rapid response services to resolve the issue using a sophisticated tested action protocol. That's interesting, using a sophisticated tested action protocol. In the past, whenever the RNC, the Republican Party, has said they're going to watch this stuff, they never tested anything beforehand. And on Election Day, it wouldn't work. Many of you watching this program will remember the fiasco with Mitt Romney in 2012. There are five areas of observation where we will guarantee coverage and aggressive attorneys will be engaged at all these stages to stop Democrat attempts to circumvent rules. Number one, logic and accuracy machine testing, early voting, Election Day voting, mail ballot processing, adjudication and duplication of ballots, post-election canvas audits and recounts. Attorneys will be stationed at every single target processing center where mail ballots are tabulated. This program starts with lawyers committing to battleground state polling sites, county boards of elections, Secretary of State's offices, and in the Republican Party war rooms. Every single battleground state is operating its own election integrity hotline. The state Republican war room is the command center where lawyers will field all incoming questions and issues reported by poll watchers and voters statewide. Lawyers will guide poll watchers to the appropriate election code and provide clarity on how various issues should be answered, resolved, or escalated. This system will be operational from the first day of early voting through Election Day and afterwards, if necessary, said the RNC statement. Now, those of you who've been involved with poll watching, many of your you listening to this podcast, watching this podcast, have done that, have known that this system has been set up before. But it was never that good, and they never took aggressive action. I think you're seeing from the new RNC that they're going to take serious action, and you should all applaud this. All of you watching this, first ask of the show, you need to reach out to the Republican Party in your state and tell them that you support this effort and you want them to go after it full bore, okay? We need to start joining ranks here to fight the election fraud, and this is a big step. This is what Trump failed to do in 2020 after, Jordan Sekulow and Jay Sekulow warned them, True the Vote warned them. They didn't do it. This time they're doing it. Folks, that's a big damn deal. We're not in 2020 anymore, folks. We're in 2024. Be excited about that. This is, the only thing I'm going to cover about the Trump trials, because I'm not going to get into this nonsense. It's a distraction to you, okay? It's a distraction, and I'll prove it here. But this was what I want to highlight. Trump visits Harlem bodega where clerk stabbed attacker in self-defense. So what is this story about? This is about Trump's brilliance. This is why Trump is just so special. So now, They say, well, we're going to lock him up in New York City for 2 months on this bogus trial. I mean, this thing is it's more garbage than any other of these trials here, okay, as a way to keep him from campaigning. So what does Trump do? He goes into New York and he talks to the people and gets more news coverage than he could have gotten if he did a campaign event. Okay? Trump visits Heartland Bodega. Former President Trump stopped by a Heartland Bodega. It's like a Dollar General or, you know, a store that's more ethnic. A Heartland Bodega on Tuesday after racking up a second day of his hush money trial in Manhattan, pledging to straighten New York out if reelected in November. A large crowd was seen in the video gathering around the bodega and chanting four more years as the presumptive GOP nominee arrived at Santa Convenience Store in Upper Manhattan on Tuesday evening. President Trump told reporters that he loves the city, but it has gotten so bad in the last 3 or 4 years. We're going to straighten out New York. So running for president, we're putting a big hit in New York. We could win New York, said the former president. Now, that's, most people say that's outrageous. You know, he's saying he thinks he could win New York. I'm not willing to doubt Donald Trump because you should have seen the crowd. You can go and look in the videos. Thousands of people were there chanting former years, all Hispanics, blacks, minorities, because they see him standing up for them when Alvin Bragg is not prosecuting the people who are committing these crimes on these citizens. They're prosecuting Donald Trump, and Trump just brings a spotlight on that, okay? But I want to say a couple things then about the trial. Number one, I'm really disgusted with Fox News, with Clay and Buck, with everyone who's so obsessed with analyzing the jurors. It's bad for us. How are these jurors, first of all, they say Donald Trump can't get a fair trial in New York, in Manhattan, all right? Well, I agree that they're mostly Democrats, but there are Trump supporters in Manhattan, and they could be on the jury. But by focusing all this attention on the jurors, you're going to make it impossible for a juror who wants to be fair to be fair. You telling me after the left leaked the Supreme Court, remember when they leaked the Supreme Court ruling about Roe v. Wade and no one got prosecuted? Totally unbelievable. You think they're not going to out any juror on this trial who was not going along with, you know, Trump's got to be convicted? How can you be on this jury without assurances from the judge, from the FBI, that your name will never be disclosed? It's terrible. And we're not helping by putting so much, you know, emphasis on it in the conservative media. It's really a disservice, okay? So I'm really concerned, not that there won't be jurors that will want to, you know, say this is bullcrap, because it's bullcrap. Any common sense person, and there's several jurors who you go, yeah, that person's not going to buy this. They only need one. They only need one to have a hung jury, okay? But this is what's wrong about our whole quote-unquote system of justice. First of all, this is no damn jury of Trump's peers. I'll guarantee you that. They should move this trial. He cannot get a trial there. Again, they're violating our laws. Our Constitution says you have a right to a fair trial. You have a right to have the trial moved to a different jurisdiction if you can't get a fair trial. Why is that not being done with Trump? Well, you know why. Because this isn't America. These are Marxists and communists, and they're not following the law. They're abusing the law. Show me the man, I'll show you the crime, comrade. Okay? But now I want to go to a positive thing. Okay? Because again, it doesn't matter if Trump gets convicted. Number one, it's going to be appealed. Number two, most voters have said, this is bogus and I don't care. Here's the important part. Don't believe all the negativism. They want you to depress you. Fox News is doing its best to depress you. Okay? Don't listen to those fools. But here's the point. They're telling you Donald Trump is going to be locked up in New York for 2 months. He has to sit there every day listening to the trial. And again, and that's something they're making him do. They're making Trump be at the trial whenever it's in session in person. So he can't be on the campaign train or whatever. That's why it's election interference. That's why they shouldn't be doing that. And they don't have to do that. They're choosing to do that. Okay? But let me make some important points to you. You just saw where Trump, you know, after the day's trial, went out and got news. Every major news agency in the world is in New York. Now, they got to cover Trump. Number two, The trials are Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. They're off on Wednesday, and they're off on Saturday and Sunday. So Trump can go and do these big rallies and stuff. It's not going to be a terrible imposition. So don't buy the lies. Keep fighting like Trump keeps fighting. But it just makes me mad that our people are the ones trying to make you feel like crap. It's just bothers me. Anyway, let's move on to some other stuff that'll make you feel like crap. Okay, so we had the attack by Iran on Israel right after our podcast last week. Okay, and here's the things you need to know about this. Number one, the Biden administration coordinated with Iran and knew about the attack. Now, they're trying to deny it, but I'll give you the facts, and you can go to wethepeopleconvention.org and look up this story. Biden administration funded Iran's terror and approved the attack on Israel. Here's the receipts. On Saturday, Iran initiated a barrage of drones and ballistic missiles at Israel, 300-plus cruise missiles and drones, all of which were shot down, basically. Thankfully, most of them were successfully intercepted and caused minimal damage by not only Israel, but by Saudi Arabia, by England, by United States, okay, and other partners. Jordan, for instance. Of course, in a stunning move, President Biden is pushing Israel not to retaliate, right? They launched the biggest attack ever from Iranian soil now. This isn't through proxies. This is not through Hezbollah or Hamas. This is from Iranian soil. They launched this massive attack, and oh, Israel should not retaliate. Bullcrap. Israel has to retaliate. And it's hard to imagine why, but Biden would do that, except that when you consider that Joe Biden has been appeasing Iran since his days as Barack Obama's vice president. With that in mind, it's also not surprising, though it's still shocking, that Joe Biden not only had prior knowledge of Iran's assault on Israel, but also technically gave it the green light under certain conditions, according to a report from the Jerusalem Post. Iran informed Turkey in advance of its planned operations against Israel, a Turkish diplomat source told Reuters on Sunday, adding that Washington had conveyed to Iran via Ankara, Turkey, that any action it took had to be within certain limits. So instead of the Biden administration saying to Iran, hey, don't attack Israel or we'll attack you, they go, well, we can see why you have to retaliate, so just make sure you stay, you know, keep it minimal. My God, it's insane. But why would you think they'd do anything else? Because Joe Biden has come under fire over the extension of sanction waivers that allegedly handed the Iranian regime billions of dollars in cash, presidential detractors claim. The White House in March, just in March, extended a waiver that unlocked an estimated $10 billion in frozen assets to enable Iraq's government payment of electric services to Iran, according to critics of the administration. The extension of the waiver program, which has already been renewed once in November, came only 6 weeks after three U.S. soldiers were killed in airstrikes conducted by an Iranian-backed Islamic resistance of Iraq. Okay? So here's the point. When Donald Trump was president, Iran was bankrupt. Trump had cut off their ability to sell oil. His sanctions were crippling them. They had money assets seized. And what does Biden do? He takes all that off, gives them billions of dollars. With the Ukraine war, Iran has been selling their oil and making billions of dollars. What did they do with that? They funded Hezbollah and Hamas. They orchestrated the attack on Israel. So let me put this in the perspective. So here, Iran sends 300 missiles and drones and things to attack Israel. They paid for those with your tax dollars, with our money, or with money that we let them have back that we had seized. Okay? So we, Biden, funded their attack, and then we give Israel money, and we use our cruise missiles and our air force to shoot them down. You and I paid for everything. We paid for everything because Joe Biden's a traitor and a moron. Okay? It's just unbelievable. So what happened was, you know, that Israel responded. Okay? Now, how did, so let me, I'll stop with it. So how did Biden administration respond? Biden administration announces new sanctions targeting Iran's drone industry after attack on Israel. It's just unbelievable that they would say, well, that's our response. That's America's firm response. We put sanctions on their drone industry. If you bought any drones in the United States, do you have a drone? Did you buy one? Yeah. Where was it made? Probably China. Yeah. So you think Iran might be able to get past these sanctions from help with China? Help from China? You think? That's why Biden's a moron. That's why Biden's people are fools. But the Israelis aren't fools. So Israeli strikes back at Iran, explosions rock airbase and city linked to Tehran's nuke programs. But U.S. denies nuclear facilities were targeted after Netanyahu launched attack in defiance of Biden. All right. So the, you know, the Israelis didn't listen to Joe Biden. They acted. Israel has conducted strikes in Iran in retaliation for Tehran's unprecedented drone and missile assault earlier this week, defying U.S. President Joe Biden's warning that more attacks could plunge the Middle East further into conflict. The city of Isfahan, I-S-F-A-H-A-N, Isfahan, is in central Iran, was struck at 5 a.m. local time, with Israeli projectiles reported to have targeted an Air Force base near Isfahan, which long has been home to Iran's fleet of American-made F-14 Tomcats that were purchased before the 1979 Islamic Revolution. A base near the city hosted one of Iran's nuclear facilities, although the U.S. military sources reportedly said the target was not believed to be nuclear. Okay? But here's the point. What Israel wanted Iran to know is, hey, guess what? You sent 300 missiles at us, and none of them got through. We just did an attack on you, on your soil, right where your nuclear facilities are. Got the message? Got the message? We can hit you. You can't hit us. Yeah, that's how you stop the escalation. Hear, hear, Israel, way to go. Now get rid of the rest of Hamas. Finish the job. Get rid of all of Hamas. Wipe them off the face of the earth. Wish we had leadership like Netanyahu in the United States. We don't. And here's the proof. Biden announced support for Johnson's Ukraine aid plan. Yep. After all the, you know, moaning and bitching and all this stuff, you know, about the funding for Ukraine, and we got to fund Ukraine and forget about the U.S. border. You know, Mitch McConnell, the most important thing to America is funding Ukraine, yeah, except to all Americans. Okay. But there you have it. Speaker Johnson has caved. And so you can find this story at our website. Speaker Johnson to bring four bills to the House floor starting today. While this podcast is being recorded on Saturday, April 20th, they're actually voting on these four bills to fund aid for Ukraine, Israel, and the Indo-Pacific, but zero action to close the U.S. border, which 85% of Americans want. So you're Speaker Johnson, and 85% of Americans want something, and it's an election year. And you decide that's not good politics for your party to fight for that. Yeah. Yeah. That didn't take long. Now, did it? Louisiana Republican Speaker Mike Johnson was supposed to protect America's money and national interests, not join President Joe Biden and Democrats in their charge to give more of it away. Yet on Wednesday, Johnson decided to add to the $34 trillion in national debt by proposing three separate bills providing aid to Ukraine, Israel, and Indo-Pacific Taiwan. And he's got Biden's blessing in doing so. I'd like to know where that money is actually coming from, as America's taxpayers' pockets are fresh out. They're just going to print it. Just going to print it. People are skipping eating just to make mortgage payments. 57% of young adults between the ages of 18 and 24 have moved back home. 57%. The largest number since the Great Depression. Over 8 million illegals have already flooded our borders. It's way more than that. And are now demanding Americans continue to pay for their free and easy lifestyle. Squatters are overtaking vacant homes. Pawn shops are at capacity due to people selling their things merely to survive. Americans are taking on extra shifts, second jobs, and dipping into their savings out of desperation. None of that speaks to extra money to help anyone like Ukraine and Israel and Taiwan. Biden and the Democrats have been driving the United States into the ground with this open checkbook they seem to think they have, and now Johnson has joined them. According to The Hill, Biden responded to Johnson's proposal with the following. The House must pass the package this week, and the Senate should quickly follow. I will sign this into law immediately to send a message to the world. We stand with our friends, and we won't let Iran or Russia succeed. But we won't stand with Americans. That's what that says. Johnson's plan includes four bills in total. While the fourth comprised of many Republican priorities, including a ban of the sale of TikTok. Okay, we'll talk more about that in a minute. According to the Wall Street Journal, the $95 billion aid package largely matches the price tag and contours of the measure that passed the Democratic-controlled Senate earlier this year. As the bills don't address any security emergencies at the border or border policy at all, plenty of Republicans are angry. They're angry, don't you know? So let me explain what's going on here. There's four bills. Why? Because if it was one bill and things like banning TikTok, okay, and things like closing the border were included, you could stop all of it because of those issues. By making it four bills, we're going to vote separately on Israel, on Taiwan, on Ukraine, and on the Republican priorities. Oh, guess which one of those will fail? Guess which one? Yeah, the one on Republican priorities. Speaker Johnson is complicit. He's aiding and abetting our enemies, the Marxist, Democrat, Communists. That's what he's doing. And so, yes, I support Marjorie Taylor Greene and Thomas Massey, and now there's others who are saying we need to remove Johnson. It's just an embarrassment. It's real simple. None of this has to come to the floor. Johnson can say, he can literally say, either you close the border or none of this happens. He didn't do that because he's weak. Okay? So speaking of weak and shameful, okay, this is just, you know, again, a sad thing. On Monday, the House voted again on FISA, which they passed last week, and I reported to you. But because of a motion by one of the congressmen, there was going to be another vote. Now, I know all of you who watch this podcast religiously, and those who are new need to understand. I have rules. I have philosophies that guide my decision-making. And one of them is that we only fight fights that we reasonably can win and are worth winning. Second one is, I will never waste your time, effort, or money. I try to hold myself to those principles all the time. I have to apologize to you because on Monday, I thought this had a chance, and I put out a message to many of you via email and text saying, call your House members and tell them to change the FISA bill to include warrants for spying on American citizens. This never had a chance. And I never should have asked you to act on it. I just misread the tea leaves. So if you called, I'm sorry that I took your time. And I don't want that to diminish your faith in us. Because I would say this is one of the very few times I've ever had to apologize for asking you to do something. Because at the end, it proved to be not worth the effort. But I did want to apologize for that. Okay. Now, the people who don't want to apologize and should apologize is the Democrats who betrayed their voters. The shameful vote on Mayorkas in the Senate is a disgrace. Now, why do I say that? Because in places like New York, in Chicago, in LA, in the Democratic strongholds, their people are screaming. Go look at the residents of Chicago. screaming again at the mayor of Chicago, the black Marxist Democrat mayor of Chicago, black Democrat citizens of Chicago are demanding that he stop giving all their money to the illegals. Okay? So if you're a Democrat and you voted against impeaching Mayorkas and you're working with Biden to not shut down the border, then who are you representing? Yeah, you're representing communist China. You're representing the tyrants that want to destroy America. That's who you're representing. Senate Democrats this week face a test of whether they take the laws they pass seriously. Like their counterparts in the House, they fail. Okay? Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas was only the second cabinet secretary ever to be impeached and the first since 1876. House Republicans passed the bill of impeachment on purely party line vote. They were right to do so, even though they understood from the outset that the Democratic majority in the Senate precluded a conviction. The impeachment was legally proper because Mayorkas committed high crimes and misdemeanors. It was politically prudent because it gave Republicans a chance to lay out their case before the public on the Biden administration's flagrant lawlessness at the border. And it was restrained. Everything Mayorkas did was authorized or ratified by the White House. But Republicans chose to impeach only the Senate-controlled Mayorkas and not the elected president. They could justify having done both, and they probably will impeach Biden later this summer. Mayorkas' conduct has been egregious. He has ignored federal statutes requiring that illegal immigrants be detained until they are removed, given an asylum, or otherwise legally adjudicated. He has twisted the definitions of legal status and incoherently extended protection status to 700,000 Venezuelan migrants. He has overseen the administration's insistence that Texas may neither exercise its own sovereignty at the border nor insist that the laws of the nation be enforced. He has handed out meaningless court dates, sometimes a decade in the future, as a substitute for enforcement today. It is ironic that the Senate took the same approach, first delaying action against Mayorkas and then dismissing all charges out of hand. The House charged Mayorkas with willful and systemic refusal to comply with the law in disregard of seven different enumerated statutory requirements and with a breach of the public trust for false statements to Congress and obstruction of congressional oversight. Okay? Real crimes, real charges, yet every member of the Senate Democratic Caucus, including embattled red state incumbents such as John Tester from Montana and Sherrod Brown from Ohio, voted to dismiss the charges without a trial. Chuck Schumer's motion to dismiss the impeachment contended that the charges do not allege conduct that rises to the level of high crimes and misdemeanors, even though we just showed that he did. And Schumer argued that they described only policy disagreements. In other words, rather than try the evidence and dispute the facts, prove your opinion, Schumer. Schumer's position that even if it's true that Mayorkas refused entirely to enforce federal law and misled Congress about it, that is within the acceptable range of behavior by executive officers. The hell it is. The hell it is. And that's why Donald Trump's going to win bigger in November than anyone can imagine. Because the Democrats understand they're being betrayed. Now, I want to play this quick clip from Josh Hawley because I think it's really powerful to understand how outrageous this is, what Mayorkas has done. Follow this clip, please.
Come back to José Ibarra, if we can. You know who that is. That's a question. You know what he did.
I know what he's accused of doing.
Which is?
Murdering a young woman.
And that wasn't the first crime that he committed in this country, was it?
Senator, as I've articulated previously, I'm not going to speak about the facts of the case because there is an ongoing criminal investigation.
Have you read his parole file?
Senator, same answer.
So you're not going to say whether or not you've read the parole file? I've got it right here. Have you read this?
Senator, I do not want to speak to the particulars of the case given the pending criminal
prosecution. Now, I find this interesting because this is a new answer today. You've changed your answers all over the map on this, and it looks like to me you just don't want to answer the question. 2 days ago, you were asked about this in the House Homeland Security Committee. I've got the transcript right here in front of me. You were asked the same question. Jose Ibarra, why was he paroled? You said, I don't know. You said, I don't know. I don't have the case details with me today. Congressman Bishop says, you don't know? And you said, I don't know. I don't have the details with respect to that individual's case, but I would be pleased to provide them to you, Congressman. You didn't know 2 days ago. Now, interestingly, on April the 10th, 6 days before that, you gave Senator Katie Britt a different answer. She asked you the same question. She said, why was Jose Ibarra paroled into the United States? You said, and I quote, Ranking Member Britt, there was no derogatory information of which we were aware. So you were happy to comment on the case then on April the 10th. By April the 16th, you had developed amnesia, and today you say you just won't comment. So which is it, Mr. Secretary? Now that we have the file, I'll tell you what the difference is. Congressman Bishop didn't have the parole file, and Senator Britt didn't have the parole file, and now we do have the parole file. And now we all know that the reason he was paroled into this country was because lack of detention capacity, which, as you and I both know, is not a valid reason under the statute. And now that we know that for sure, this is right out of the parole file. Here it is. Subject was paroled due to detention capacity at the Central Processing Center in El Paso, Texas. Now suddenly, you don't want to talk about it. This is extraordinary. It's also a pattern with you. So, let me just try one more time. Have you read the parole file?
Senator, I'm going to give the same answer, and let me say it.
Well, which one? Are you going to give me the answer you gave to Senator Britt? Are you going to give the answer you gave to Congressman Bishop, or the answer you gave to Senator Paul, or do you want to try a fourth one?
Senator, I will not speak to the particulars of the case, given the pending criminal prosecution.
Yeah, well, I'm sure. Well, you certainly, of course you don't want to, because it is an absolutely damning indictment of your policies. Let's just review Jose Barrera and how Ibarra, rather, and how he came to be here. On September the 8th, 2022, he was encountered by United States Border Patrol in El Paso, Texas, and was paroled into the United States due to lack of detention capacity. A provision, a proviso, a rule that is not permitted under the statute. You and I both know you know this. You knew it when you were talking to Congressman Bishop. You knew it when you were testifying to Senator Britt, and you know it today. You just never wanted to cop to it because the statute doesn't permit it. And so you lied to Congressman Bishop, and you lied to Senator Britt. And now you are hiding behind the ongoing prosecution excuse because it's the last one left to you because you testified falsely under oath.
So lying to Congress is an impeachable offense. They just proved that he lied to Congress right then and there. But then the Senate voted not to put him on trial. The guy's a criminal, and he's anti-American, and he's taking intentional action to flood our nation with people who have no loyalty to our nation. That proves it right there. It's all you need to see. It's disgusting. So now I'm going to move on to another segment here that's really exciting to me, because it's has to do about this video I gave you guys that talks about the whole social media and it destroying our youth and how to fix it. But before we get to that, I mentioned previously that one of the four bills that they're voting on today while this podcast is going on, that is, you know, the Republican things to ban TikTok. Well, isn't it interesting that an article came out that the Chinese government, that actually the embassy in Washington, was lobbying congressmen not to vote to ban TikTok. And yet, here's everything you feared about TikTok that is true. This is what's going on, and yet the Chinese embassy is talking to your congressman about not banning it. In this story that was in the PJ Media, this guy says, I literally worked on a project that gave U.S. data to China, former TikTok senior data scientist Evan Turner revealed on Monday in a Fortune story. According to Turner, his efforts went far beyond what social media apps usually do, which is to upload every scrap of data they can get a hold of to the parent company's servers. Every 2 weeks, the Spectator reported, Turner emailed spreadsheets filled with data on hundreds of thousands of U.S. users to TikTok owner ByteDance workers in Beijing, China. The driver's licenses of American users were also accessible on the platform, the New York Times wrote last year, as were some users' potential illegal content, such as a child's sexual abuse materials. In many cases, the information was available in Lark's group, essentially chat rooms of employees with thousands of members. Just to be clear, ByteDance is headquartered in Beijing and is closely tied to the Chinese Communist Party. Worse, if that's even possible, Turner said there were Americans that were working in upper management that were completely complicit in this exchange of data on our kids and on us to China. There's a reason Shaka Rakow's Libs of TikTok, you've heard of the Libs of TikTok, she's the one that does this, has so much material to use. TikTok's algorithm is tweaked to highlight the weirdest, the worst, the most divisive content served up to young minds who assume that the weirdest, the worst, and the most divisive is normal. If that's all you see, you think it's normal. It's what they see, and it's what their friends see on social media. Every social contagion requires a pathway. The version of TikTok that ByteDance peddles in the West is tailor-made to serve as the no-speed-limit Autobahn of social contagion into the U.S. If you want a good idea of why so many adolescent girls are suddenly trans and getting their healthy breasts cut off, even though gender dysphoria has, up until recent years, been an affliction almost exclusively for men, look no further than TikTok. Then there are the political manipulations. My younger son reminded me this morning that his friends, most of whom do have TikTok, got tailored alerts a few weeks ago urging them to contact Senator John Hickenlooper, tell him not to ban TikTok. Wait until China or North Korea starts a shooting war in the Pacific and watch how TikTok galvanizes the anti-American, anti-Japanese, Taiwan, South Korean protests like we're seeing with the Palestinian protests in the U.S. Beijing has American youth on speed dial, and that's why TikTok either needs to be banned or shut down. But we're not going to do it. You watch today. We're not going to do it. And I understand the free speech part of this, folks. But it's the Chinese are manipulating us, and they're so brilliant at it. Here's the proof of that. So while the Chinese embassies are talking to our congressmen who are voting today about whether to ban TikTok, and they're saying, oh, free speech, you can be on TikTok and it's okay. Okay. Right? Yeah. What did they do in China this week? WhatsApp and Telegram were just banned from Apple Store in China. And it's more than just those two. China bans WhatsApp, Signal, Threads, and Telegram from the iPhone App Store. The Wall Street Journal says Apple had to comply with the country's censorship demand. Now, what are those apps? What is Telegram and Signal? Many of us in the conservative movement use it because they're encrypted so that we can communicate to each other, supposedly, without the deep state spying on us, so we can have freedom of speech. China doesn't want freedom of speech. What do? They just banned them. In a statement sent to the publication, Apple said the Cyberspace Administration of China ordered the removal of these apps from the China storefront based on their national security concerns. We are obligated to follow the law in the countries where we operate, even when we disagree. Yeah. So China said, we're banning it. We're banning your stuff here, but don't be smart enough to ban our stuff in your country, even though the evidence is overwhelming that it is hurting America. It is a big part of destroying America. So that brings me to our video. I put this up. This is by Dr. Jonathan Haidt, and it's a must-watch video. And I say that a lot to you guys, but I work hard to make sure that I give you videos that are worth your time and effort. I don't think I've ever put up a video that is more worth your time and effort. And if you haven't gone to WeThePeopleConvention.org to watch this video, then you don't give a damn about America. You don't care about your children or your grandchildren. This video is the most comprehensive video that explains, shows you clear as day, that until smartphones and social media, our kids were growing up to be adults, to be well-balanced, to be able to be socially connected, to understand how to act as humans. And since smartphones and social media, what's happened is they've lost all their capacity to interact as humans. The depression, the suicide rates, we're killing our children because we've allowed this. And it's got to stop. But here's the best part. The best part is he talks about that. He puts it in the video, how to stop it. It's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. Now, it's 52 minutes long. You got to go to wethepeopleconvention.org and watch it. But I'm going to play this one clip because it's so important to understand what is affecting this. This is not about the kids, and this is not the answer. I'll give you the answer as this plays, but this is a very interesting clip.
Other question, you shared a fair amount of international data, and basically, you know, the takeaway for me quickly was this is not just an American thing. Let me flip that around, though. Were there countries that didn't have or that don't have these trend lines? Did you see any anomalies and any hypotheses about the anomalies?
Yeah, so a lot of this work was done with my fantastic researcher, Zach Rausch, who has become the world's expert on suicide stats and mental health stats around the world. And so if you go to my Substack, the After Babel Substack, you'll find his amazing posts going through all these countries. And we started with the countries where we had good data and we had reason to think that there was a lot of individualism, that there was going to be these big effects. And so all the Anglo countries, all the Scandinavian countries, all have the same thing. Some studies of Europe as a whole show much smaller effects. And Asia is just very different. In Asia, they don't have good mental health. The kids in Korea and Japan are not doing particularly well, but they're not showing necessarily the same patterns as us. So it's very different. They're using different apps. So I'm going to have to spend a lot of time studying Asia. But first, we're just going to try to figure out the rest of Europe. And here's our hypothesis from what we see so far. It's famously Southern Europe, Catholic Europe. People are more rooted in communities. Durkheim talked about this. Max Weber talked about this. The Protestant work ethic. So there's a lot more individualism in the north of Europe and in the Anglo world, the Protestant world. Well, individualism is great for happiness if you also have good families and communities. You're free, the world's your oyster, you've got gender equality, you've got all these amazing things in the Protestant countries, more so than Southern Europe or Catholic Europe or Eastern Europe. But then when the tornado comes and everyone gets on social media, it's the kids, the individualistic countries, they have no roots, they just get whisked away. Whereas the kids who have to go to church every Sunday and they live with their grandmother, those kids didn't get whisked away. And I can add in a very important point, which is when you break down the American data by gender, I've shown you, when you do it by politics, you find all the effects are bigger for young people on the left than the right. All the effects are bigger for those who don't go to church or have no religion. They say, the question is religion, how important is religion in your life? And those who say not important versus those very important. So it's especially secular liberals and especially secular liberal girls. That's where you see, I mean, it's just like through the roof. They were just carried away by social media into very dark places. And I think, frankly, we're seeing the expression of that on campuses this month in terms of the willingness to embrace ideologies that are bizarre and antisocial and divorced from reality and history.
Yeah, there you have it. The people who are being depressed, the people who are committing suicide, are the people who have no grounding in family, in religion, in faith. And they're the ones who are being hurt by this. And we've got to stop it. And so what he talks about in his podcast, in this video, is just really, it's great. It's simple. He says four simple norms to break collective action problems. Number one, no smartphones before high school. I talked to you about this last week when I was so upset about the deep fake nudes that we needed to ban smartphones. Number two, no social media before age 16. We need to pass laws that social media companies cannot have members and phone companies cannot deliver social media to anyone that is under 16 years of age. Free, phone-free schools. He talks about having lockers at schools where even though the kids only have flip phones, okay, and he talks about flip phones, which I talked about last week, they would have phone lockers where you go to school and they lock up your phone. because you can't pay attention if you're always on your damn phone, okay? And then this last one, much more childhood independence and free play. He talks about us actually going to our legislators and getting laws passed that don't have you charged because some nosy neighbor sees your kids walking four blocks away from your house and they say you're doing child abuse because you're not watching your children. We've actually passed those insane laws. This is the biggest ask I've ever asked of you in the history of this podcast. I need you to go and watch this video, okay? Go watch the whole thing. Share it with everyone. And then start implementing the strategies that he lays out in your school and in your community. He actually talks about that the schools can do things that are free. Two great ideas. You'll love this. He says, every school needs to open its playground an hour before school so that kids can come and play in the playground unsupervised. There would be only one teacher there, and their job is only to intercede if someone gets hurt. Not to say, oh, Johnny and Billy, stop fighting, or you can't be careful, you might fall on that swing set. No. You go for an hour before school and play unsupervised. Number two, the schools need to initiate play days, like a play event after school. He suggested on Friday. And when school ends, you keep the playground open for an hour after school and you give them things like cardboard boxes or some wood or, you know, some, you know, plastic pipes they can fit into different things. You just put stuff out in the playground and let kids play. And the reason you do it on Friday is because then the kids will be having fun. And when it's over, they'll say, well, how about if I come over to your house on Saturday and we play? The whole part of this video is that if we deny kids smartphones and social media until they're 16, what are they going to do for entertainment? They're going to play. They're going to talk to each other. And it's got to be unsupervised. And for all of us, us old folks who always talk about, I was out until the streetlights came on. My parents didn't know where the hell I was. Watch this video. He'll explain why that wasn't just fun. It was crucial to human development. Our kids, our boys aren't men because they can't become men because they don't learn how to become men. Our girls aren't girls and women because they don't learn how to be girls and women. And they can't interact with each other because they don't get any chance to interact with each other. This video is powerful. Damn, I'm begging you. Watch this video and then share it with everyone and then act on this. Our country's at stake. Our kids are at stake. Our grandkids are at stake. We can't fight the Chinese if we don't ban TikTok and we don't ban social media. Do you understand? That's why the flag's upside down. This is how you fight, so we can put the flag right side up. It's a psyops. We're under psychological attack from little kids. And it's not an accident. It's a plan. Act. That's what we do. We fight for our country. We fight for our individual freedom, liberty, and prosperity. This is the most important ask I've ever made of you. And if you're not going to do this, then why the hell are you watching this show? This isn't elective. This is mandatory. I'm counting on you. Our country's counting on you. Your family and your community's counting on you. I don't think you'll let me down. I think you'll act. I'm counting on it. All right. I better take a little break here. So we're going to break for the second half of the show. I hope you've enjoyed the first half. I thought we had lots of good content. I got lots more to come. So let's take a little break. You've been listening to the We the People Convention News and Opinion Podcast. And my name is Tom Zawistowski.
when you're playing a video, including our podcast, you'll see this little cloud button. And if you click it, it'll actually download the video to your hard disk. And this works on our podcast page as well. If you're playing our podcast, and it's going to be loud, so I won't play it for lunch, but there's our podcast playing, and you can see this little, you know, download button, okay? The other thing you got to notice on our podcast page is that there's a link here where you can send me a message about this podcast. Hey, it was great. Hey, I didn't like it. What, you know, something was wrong, or here's a correction, that kind of thing. You can use that link. And then these are the stories that I covered in this particular podcast. And you'll see there's links that go to the stories, to the articles that I used in reporting on that. So you can click on that. You'll also see that you can sign up for our emails and text messages, but you can also watch our podcast on Roku TV and on Amazon Fire TV. And these are the instructions for doing that. So this is all on our podcast page, right? Right on the front page where the yellow button was. So if you click there, you know, this is our podcast page. These are the instructions for watching on Roku TV or Amazon Fire. And I watch our podcast on TV. It just feels more comfortable. So you can do that. We're also on Rumble. If you go to Rumble, you should join Rumble. And, you know, it's Tom Z at WTPC. You'll see our podcast there. So you can get us a lot of different ways, including on Apple iTunes. And then this is an audio version of our podcast. If you click here, it'll just play the audio of the podcast. It will not, show you the video. So people can, you know, listen to that while they're jogging or, you know, working out, working in the yard, or just relaxing and just want to listen to the audio and not watch the video. And again, this is available on phone, on your iPad, on your laptop, on your computer, any way you want. And you can share, you know, this, you know, whatever you see. If you're on a page that you really like, and you know, you see an article that you think, geez, I've got to share this article, you know, with someone in my family, you can send them an email by clicking on the little envelope. You can post it on Parler or MeWe. If you click on this, you get all kinds of options, you know, where you can put it on Twitter or Facebook, whatever, which we don't support, but you can do whatever you want. So we ask that you share what you see on our We the People convention site, and that you get more people to look at it, because that's the whole idea here, to help educate people, inform them. And then, as I said before, Link, we're not just about talk, we're about action. And in my podcast every week, which is published every Saturday, so if you know, the new podcast usually comes out every Saturday, and in that podcast, I will ask you to do certain things that will help protect and defend your individual freedom, liberty, and prosperity. So that's the We the People Convention website. Come back often, use it to be informed, and share it with others. Thanks a lot.
The We the People Convention News and Opinion Radio Program is paid for by donors like you. You can donate to the We the People Convention and support our cause by going to wethepeopleconvention.org or by sending your check in any amount to We the People Convention, P.O. Box 6211, Akron, Ohio, 44312. All right, and we're back for the second half of the show. I hope you enjoyed the first half of the show. I hope I wasn't too pushy with my ask for you to watch the video about how our kids are being destroyed by social media and smartphones and take action on that. We're going to keep beating that drum all the time. This has to happen. We got to make it happen. I also ask you to call the Republican Party in your state and urge them to be involved with the RNC to do all the election stuff that the Trump team announced that I talked about. And there will be more asks in this second half of the show. So thank you for, you know, everybody that's watching. And certainly, you know, it's important that you don't just watch, that you share this information and that we take action. The reason to share it, the reason you share the podcast, is so that more people will know what you know, and then they can take the action we're asking everyone to take. And the more people take action, the more results we'll get. So that's pretty direct. Okay. Got some really good stories here in the second half and things you need to know about. This may have slipped under your radar, but it's important. I'll explain why. Maine governor allows national popular vote legislation to become law. So what is this about? Many of you are not aware of this. The Maine governor, Janet Mills, said she will allow a narrowly passed bill that award the state's 4 electoral college votes in the presidential election to go towards the winner of the national popular vote to become law, as opposed to the current system where the votes go either to the winner of the state's popular vote or according to the results in each of the congressional districts, as in the case in Maine and Nebraska. Okay, they split their electoral votes. A group known as the National Popular Vote is behind a push for states to enter into a national popular vote interstate compact that would hand the presidency to whoever gets the greatest number of popular votes at the national level. Rather than abolishing the Electoral College, which is what the left wants to do, they want direct democracy. Okay, they don't want a representative form of government. That's the French Revolution versus ours. This would require presidential electors in the states and the District of Columbia to vote for the candidates who gets the most popular votes overall, which would see the outcomes of the elections decided by the views of those living in major population centers like Los Angeles, Houston, and Chicago, instead of by entire swing states. Maine's legislation passed the state's House of Representatives on April 2nd by a slim 73-72 margin. It cleared the Senate the following day by an 18-12 vote, and the governor refused to veto it. She didn't approve it. She's just going to let it become law. Now, this is the key point. They're trying to get rid of the Electoral College. First thing you got to understand is they need to get to 270 votes, or it doesn't matter, okay? Well, with Maine coming in, they're 64 votes shy. Here's a map of the states that, you know, have passed it, and now there are 101 votes are pending if these other states pass it. So when they get to enough legislatures that have passed this thing that says your vote in your state doesn't matter for president, because the election, the electoral votes that elect the president from your state are going to go to whoever wins the national popular vote. Well, why are they doing this? Because no Republican has won the national popular vote since like George Bush Sr., I think. Okay? So they want what? They want to have California and New York and Illinois dominate the country. So these representatives in Maine just gave the votes of their citizens to New York and Chicago and LA. Okay? Now, what is the issue with the Electoral College? Why did they create it? In popular discourse and in the press, it is often asserted or assumed that the main reason that the framers adopted the Electoral College was that they feared that if the people were allowed to elect the president directly, that they might be swayed by demagogues, okay? So a dictator could rise up, because if you can win the popular vote, you know, you can be a tyrant. It is the contention of this article that such a distrust of democracy was not the primary motivating factor in the creation of the Electoral College. After a survey of political science textbooks that say or imply that the Electoral College was adopted because of fear of democracy, we examined the framers' deliberations to make the case the main motivation for adoption of the Electoral College was the need to remove selection from the legislatures and at the same time to ensure that the less populous and slaveholding states would preserve the advantage they won through the Connecticut Compromise. Now, what does that basically mean? It basically means that people in Montana and South Dakota and New Mexico don't want to be dominated by the big cities. And if they get rid of the electoral vote and it's a quote unquote direct democracy, why would Trump or the Democrat even campaign in your state? Why would they even bother? You just go to the 10 most populous states, and if you win those, you win. It's a disaster. It's the taking apart of our Constitution. That's what they're trying to do. And we're going to have to take action. when we take back control of the federal government, and we're going to have to stop this. And it's going to be tough because in the Constitution, the founders gave the states the ability to decide how to run their own elections. And so I believe it's constitutionally legal for these states to say, well, you know, your votes don't count. We're going to give our electoral votes to whoever wins the popular vote. That hasn't, to my knowledge, been adjudicated in court. Is that something the Supreme Court must decide? I don't know, but it's a danger you need to be aware of, okay? It's a danger you need to be aware of. Okay, next thing I want to talk about is that the fight we're in is not just here. It's global. It's global. We are fighting together, you know, with you know, people in South America, in Europe, all over the globe. And this week, there was a demonstration of that when Niles Farage, who I just, you know, love this guy, who's, you know, the guy who brought in Brexit, Nigel Farage from Britain, he was at an event in Brussels, which was a conservative convention of all the people who are right-oriented, and they'll call them right-winged, who are running for election in Europe this year, and the mayor of Brussels shut down the event. Nigel Farage returns to right-wing conference and condemns Soviet-like cancel culture after socialist politicians' attempt to shut down the event is overruled by a judge. Nigel Farage returned to the conference in Belgium on Wednesday after a top court intervened to scrap local bans widely denounced as an assault on free speech. The former MEP was pictured back at the Claridge venue in Brussels for the second day of the National Conservative Conference after receiving the go-ahead from Belgium's top administrative court overnight. The court sided with Farage and fellow attendees Sheila Braverman and Hungarian leader Viktor Orban in ruling that attempts by local mayors to disperse or close down the events violated the country's constitutional right to peaceful assembly. Despite the shutdown order, the conference, whose attendees include right-wing figures and elected officials from across Europe, had limped on through Tuesday while police blocked new attendees from attending. The Brussels police actually closed off the venue and wouldn't let people in. Nigel Farage penned a scathing tirade against cancel culture and blasted the Brussels elite for ensuring no other views are allowed in response to the attempts to shut down the conference. Cancel culture is saying, I do not want to hear your opinion. What happened today is an updated form of Soviet communism, the former UKP later lamented in the Daily Telegraph after police and local officials mounted a closure order to shut down the keynote speech. Francis Firebrand, former presidential candidate Eric Zemmour, who was among those barred from entering on Tuesday after concerted efforts by local mayors to block the event, was back on day two and prepared to take the stage. Thank to God, thanks to the pressure we exerted, thanks to the scandals in all of Europe, Europe has shown that it is still the continent of liberal democracy and the rule of law, Zemmour told reporters on site. Hungary Prime Minister Orban was to deliver the keynote address on Wednesday before attending a summit of EU leaders, having vowed, we will not give up. Emir Kyr, the mayor of Brussels' St. Jose district, had invoked safety issues for the ban, but he also wrote that the far right, which is predicted to surge in EU-wide elections taking place in June, was not welcome. So you guys see what's going on here? The conservatives are pushing back against the World Economic Forum, against the globalists, against the Marxists supported by China. We are surging in Europe, and there's many elections, not just in the U.S. with Trump. There's many elections, and they don't want us to win. But we're fighting, and we are winning. Kyr said yesterday he would immediately take measures to ban the event when it moved to the Claridge event space, provoking threats of a legal challenge from the organizers, which succeeded and allowed the event to go on. Okay? So again, you need to understand that we're not alone. This fight is bigger than us. And like I said at the beginning, it's not Republicans versus Democrats or right versus left. It is totalitarian, statist, communist, Marxist versus freedom, liberty, and prosperity by individuals. That's the fight, and it's global. We are in World War III. It's just a different kind of war. but it could turn into the kind of wars like we've had in the past if we don't look out. Very dangerous times. Okay, so speaking of very dangerous times, this story has been percolating, and this is a follow-up, but you need to be concerned if you fly on airplanes. Whistleblower testifies Boeing is producing defective planes, says he received physical threats for saying so. Whistleblower tells Senate that senators that Boeing planes are unsafe. Sam Cefalor, an engineer at Boeing, told lawmakers that the company is cutting corners and assembling 787 and 777 jets and claimed that his supervisors have retaliated against him for blowing the whistle. A whistleblower with more than 40 years of engineering experience told members of the Senate that Boeing is putting out defective airplanes in testimony Wednesday. Well, they're falling out of the sky. They got doors blowing out. How many incidents has Boeing had? They just threw out their whole executive team because they are putting out defective planes. Cefalor testified that he raised safety concerns with Boeing over the course of 3 years, but had been ignored. He described retaliation by his supervisors, including being transferred out of the 787 program into the 777 program, and even alleged physical threats made against him. I was told not to create delays. I was told, frankly, to shut up. Cefalor described an exchange with his direct supervisor in which he was allegedly threatened after bringing his concerns up in a meeting. My boss said, I would have killed someone who said what you said in a meeting, he testified. This is not a safety culture when you get threatened by bringing up issues of safety concerns. Okay? Now, I bring this story up because a few weeks ago or months ago, I brought this story up. John Mitch Barnett, 62, a whistleblower in the midst of giving depositions alleging Boeing retaliated against him for complaints about quality lapses, was found dead from a gunshot wound Saturday in Charleston, South Carolina. The Charleston County Coroner Office reported that his death appears to be a result of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. In two full days of depositions, Barnett was questioned by Boeing's lawyers on Thursday and by his own lawyers, Robert Turkowitz and Brian Knowles, on Friday. Barnett, a former Shomis County resident living in Louisiana, was scheduled to continue the deposition with his lawyers on Saturday. When he didn't show up, Turkowitz and Knowles called his hotel to ask for a welfare check. Barnett was found dead in his truck parked at the hotel. In a statement, Turkowitz and Knowles, his attorneys, called Barnett a brave, honest man of the highest integrity. He cared dearly about his family, his friends, the Boeing company, his Boeing co-workers, and the pilots and the people who flew on Boeing aircraft. We have rarely met someone with a more sincere and forthright character. The statement went on to say that Barnett was in very good spirits and really looked forward to putting this phase of his life behind him and moving on. Quote, we didn't see any indication he would take his own life. No one can believe it. We are all devastated. The Charleston police need to invest this fully and accurately and tell the public what they find out. Barnett's niece, Kathy Glipsy, said Thursday that he was a fun uncle and that there's no way he would have killed himself. I don't believe he killed himself. I believe he was murdered. I believe this is a big cover-up at Boeing. And where is the federal government? Here the Senate is looking into this. What about all these government agencies? What about, you know, Buttigieg and transportation? Where's the investigation into what's going on at Boeing? This is scary stuff that affects you and me and all of us. But again, if you're a Marxist and you're trying to destroy America, you're not looking into this stuff. You just keep lying to the American people. And that's why I tell you at the beginning of the show, we take the news of the week, which is mostly propaganda, and try to get to the truth. Well, there were big stories out about how it was wrong that you people like Tom Zawistowski and Dan Bongino and you know these other conservative commentators are saying that crime is so high, and it's just not true. The crime rates are down, said the Democrats. Oh, yeah? Here's a story. Bad data from the FBI misled about crime. And we always talk about that. Can you believe anything the government puts out? Anything. So here's the story. The fourth quarter 2023 crime report from the FBI, the federal government's keeper of crime data, is unreliable at best and deceptive at worst. The FBI's preliminary 2023 data show murder declined by 13.2% across the country and violent crime dropped by 5.7% compared to 2022 levels. Various news headlines have reported the FBI's numbers, unquestioningly claiming murder is plummeting and violent crime declined significantly to pre-pandemic levels. Really? But these latest figures warrant skepticism, as we outline in a new report. In fact, violent crime is up substantially from 2019 levels, and last year's apparent drop is less significant than it appears. Part of the problem is how police departments report offenses to the FBI. The FBI asked, then demanded, that law enforcement agencies transition away from systems they used for decades to a new, more detailed, but onerous one. The 2021 mandate to use NIBRIS to submit crime data proved a disaster, as overstretched departments, especially in larger cities, failed to reach compliance and thus did not submit their data. In 2019, 89% of law enforcement agencies, covering 97% of the population in the United States, submitted their murder and crime data. But by 2021, the coverage plummeted to less than 63% of the departments, overseeing just 65% of the population. And guess who didn't report? Chicago, LA, and New York City all failed to submit crime data. To increase participation, the FBI then relaxed the NIBRIS requirements in 2022, allowing agencies to revert to the legacy system. But many other cities like St. Louis, which had transitioned to the new method, still struggled to comply and submit partial or faulty data. FBI compensates by relying more heavily on estimates or informed guesswork to fill the gaps and produce aggregate data, which they release to the public, and is a damned lie. It's a damn lie. There's the point. Where are all the murders? Chicago? Chicago, anybody? Oh, but their data wasn't included. But you can be assured that murder rates are down and assaults are down. Yeah, that's really good. All right, on to some more positive news, and to give some balance. This is good news. Harvard and Caltech strike a blow to the diversity lobby. Harvard and Caltech have been both reinstated the requirement from an applicant to go to school there to submit an SAT or ACT standardized test score to be considered for admission. Harvard cited a study by Opportunity Insights that showed that standardized tests were much better at predicting success of poor minority students in college than high school grades alone. Oh, but I thought they were racist. Didn't you know the SAT and the ACTs are racist? Oh, except they're not. Standardized tests are a means for all students, regardless of their background and life experience, to provide information that is predictive of success in college and beyond, Hopi Hoekstra, Dean of Faculty of Arts and Sciences at Harvard, said in a statement. In short, more information, especially such strongly predictive information, is valuable for identifying talent from across the social and economic range, she added. Caltech said in a statement that requiring standardized test scores reaffirms the school's commitment as a community of scientists and engineers to using all relevant data in a decision-making process. So what happened? You know what happened? Supreme Court decision last June that reversed several precedents on race-based admissions played a big role in the decision to return to standardized test scores as a requirement. The SATs were thrown out because of DEI and critical race theory and all the other lies. And now we're pushing back. And you got to keep pushing. You got to get rid of it wherever it exists. You got to get rid of it. So what is the Biden administration doing? Well, they're trying to continue it. They're trying to press forward with all the transgendered lies and everything. Biden's new Title IX rules protect LGBTQ plus students, but transgender sports rule still on hold. Get this. Get this piece of garbage that I woke up to on Friday. Okay? Let's see here. The rights of LGBTQ plus students will be protected by federal law, and victims of campus sexual assault will gain new safeguards under rules finalized Friday by the Biden administration. The new provisions are part of revising Title IX regulations issued by the Education Department, fulfilling a campaign pledge by President Joe Biden. He had promised to dismantle rules created by former Education Secretary Betsy DeVos under Donald Trump, who added new protections for students accused of sexual misconduct. Notably absent from Biden's policy, however, is any mention of transgender athletes. The administration originally planned to include a new policy forbidding schools from enacting outright bans on transgender athletes, but that provision was put on hold. The delay is widely seen as political maneuver during an election year in which Republicans have rallied around bans on transgender athletes in girls' sports. Now, so let me be clear what's going on here. Barack Obama, in a way to destroy American families and men, white men in particular, put rules in, sent letters. There's no law here. There's no basis of law here. Sent letters to all the colleges when he was president saying that if a woman accuses anyone of sexual assault, you can put them on trial on campus without due process. They can't even know their accuser or cross-examine them, and you can throw them out of school and actually turn them over to the county prosecutor. And thousands of boys were thrown out of college, and there were lawsuits, and they won them, and they won millions of dollars because this was a disgrace. And a good friend of ours in our family had his, he had his college, he was one of the brightest kids in our high school, and he never got a college degree because they threw him out of Kent State because of Obama's rules. And this is, remember when Obama kept saying that like every woman on campus has been raped? Because why? They were trying to victimize women and do what we talked about, the video talks about with social media, make these lefty women lunatics and destroy white men. But guess what? As many black men as white men were destroyed. Trump came in and fixed this. And Biden just reversed it. And I'm not the only one who's pissed. Check this video out from Megyn Kelly. Whoa, baby.
And I voted for Donald Trump to prevent things like this, what happened today. And when I saw the news on what Joe Biden just did to women's rights and Title IX and due process for young men on college campuses and free speech, I was horrified. And my second reaction was, at least I don't have this blood on my hands. I'm ashamed of him. I'm disgusted at you, Miguel Cardona. Shame on you. What's happened today as a result of the change in Title IX is that your daughter, or you, if you are a college-age woman, will now have to go into your college bathroom, your college locker room, and be faced with men posing as women, many of whom are only there because they get off on wearing women's clothing. They literally will have erections because they're wearing a dress into the women's locker room. Your kid's going to have to look at it, and there's not a damn thing you can do about it. Nothing. No lawmaker has voted on this. No Congress has passed this. Joe Biden did it with his education secretary. It's an agency regulation. And then your son, or you, if you are a young college-aged man, if you get accused, if he gets accused by a young woman falsely, which happens, with all due respect to my fellow women, we've all seen it happen time and time again. It does not mean all women are fake accusers, but enough of them are that we need very sturdy due process regulations to protect the accused. Now, he just lost his right to cross-examination. He cannot confront his accuser anymore because of Joe Biden and what he did today. He's fucked. Sorry, but that's the truth. These are kangaroo courts, and his representative will do shuttle diplomacy between the two rooms where he talks to the young man and then he talks to the accuser. And that's the substitute for cross-examination. And we know that the representatives who run these courts and are the judges of these kangaroo courts on college campuses, and courts is in air quotes, are victims' rights advocates. Your kid gets no protection. That's why Betsy DeVos, when she took over as education secretary after Barack Obama left office with Arne Duncan, tried to restore some semblance of normalcy. Was it because Betsy DeVos hates women? She loves rape? She wanted women to get raped over and over and for their assailants to walk free? Hell no. She wanted just a semblance of due process, and that's what she did under Trump. They've reversed it. They've undone most of her solutions to the overreach that Obama and Duncan imposed. And guess what else? It applies to K through 12. It's not just colleges. The way you talk about these issues, pronouns, he waved his magic wand to say we all have to do it the way Joe Biden wants it done.
That's pretty serious stuff. And I will post that on our podcast page so you can share that. I hope it gives you a feel for how serious this is. But I have good news. I have good news for Megan. This article here, see you in court. Biden policy nuking Title IX draws legal challenge from ADF, baby. Our friends at ADF, Alliance Defending Freedom. The Biden administration's announcement that it would be replacing biology with ideology to win a few gold stars from science-denying woke culture warriors has already drawn the promise of a legal challenge from Alliance Defending Freedom, ADF, on Friday. The Biden pursued changes to Title IX of the Education Amendment of 1972, set to take effect on August 1st, is a radical redefinition of sex that turns back the clock on equal opportunity for women, threatens student safety and privacy, and undermines fairness in women's sports, said ADF legal counsel Rachel Relu. Biden's inane version of Title IX removes biological sex in favor of gender identity and means that biological males can take scholarships meant for women, use women's locker rooms and other private facilities, and be roomed in women's housing such as dorms. Anyone who engages in wrong speak on the topic, thanks to Biden's policy, could also face punishment under the new regulations. Quote, see you in court, POTUS, ADF President, CEO, and General Counsel Kristen Wagoner later said on X. See you in court. Alliance Defending Freedom. You should donate to ADF because they fight these cases, and you know what? They win. They win. Their record is excellent. So, Megan, calm down. It's not like there's nothing we can do about it. We're going to do something about it. We're going to fight it in court, and then we're going to win the election. And you know what? We're going to get rid of this, and let's get rid of the Education Department as well in the process. How would that be for a win? That's why you're here. That's why we're doing what we're doing. That's how we fight for our country. Okay, so there was other trans news, okay? Court overturns West Virginia transgender sports ban. A federal appeals court has blocked a West Virginia law that bans students from participating in single-sex sports teams that don't match their biological sex. The Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals issued an order and opinion on April 16th that blocks enforcement of the Save Women's Sports Bill on grounds that the law violated the constitutional rights of plaintiffs, a 13-year-old eighth-grade track athlete who was born male but identifies as female. The measure was signed into law by West Virginia Governor Jim Justice in 2021. It was quickly challenged in court by the ACLU, which brought the lawsuit on behalf of this transgender, you know, gender dysphoric student. The ACL argued that the person was diagnosed with gender dysphoria in 2019 and was treated with puberty blockers followed by gender-affirming hormone therapy, never underwent male puberty, and so it doesn't have any athletic advantage over naturally born girls. That's a damn lie, okay, and it's scientifically provable. The group claims that West Virginia law discriminates against children like him on the basis of sex and transgender status in violation of the U.S. Constitution and Title IX, including the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment, which prohibits the state from denying a person within its jurisdiction equal protections of the laws. This must be appealed. I expect it will be appealed. These are cases going on all over the country, okay? But it's real simple. it's not discriminatory. Even though he was only 8 years old when he started taking puberty blockers, he still got the bone structure of a man. He's still genetically a man, and he has an illegal advantage. And all the evidence shows that. Go on our website, look at it, but we got to fight that. And so we got to fight this in Kansas. Kansas governor vetoes bill protecting children from transgender surgeries. The governor of Kansas has vetoed a bill seeking to protect minors from gender transition surgeries and is insisting that it tramps parental rights now. On Friday, Kansas Governor Laura Kelly vetoed, she's a Democrat, substitute bill for Senate Bill 233 prohibiting health care providers from performing transgender surgeries and procedures on children. The bill allows a civil cause of action against providers offering such treatments with professional disciplinary action taken against such individuals. The bill restricts the use of state funds to promote gender transition procedures, on and on and on. And she basically is doing the same old thing, saying, the bill tramples on parental rights. This divisive legislation targets a small group of Kansas by placing government mandates on them and dictating to parents how to best raise and care for their children. I do not believe that it's a conservative value, and it's certainly not a Kansas value. Kansas House Speaker Daniel Hawkins criticized the governor, also known for vetoing the act, as we watch other states, nations, and organizations reverse course on these experimental procedures on children. Governor Laura Kelly will most surely find herself on the wrong side of history with her reckless veto of this common sense protection for Kansas minors. House Republicans stand ready to override her veto, protect vulnerable Kansas kids. And that's exactly what will happen. The bill passed in February with a 80-40 vote in the House and a 26-11 vote in the Senate. They also overrode a veto of hers just a couple months ago. And so you folks in Kansas, our members in Kansas, you need to get engaged. You need to demand that your legislature overturn the governor's veto on this, because she's hurting children. She's putting them through things that scientifically do not help them. Go look at wethepeopleconvention.org, at the study that just came out from England that I talked about in last week's show, that shows unequivocally puberty blockers, all this hormone treatment does nothing to help the kids. And she is a left-wing tyrant who's trying to hurt your kids and your family by trying to promote this crap. And you got to stop it. Kansas members, it's a direct act. Write to me at wethepeopleconvention.org, Tom Z at our info at wethepeopleconvention.org, and tell me what your legislators say. I want to know. This, again, is a story that I want to share with you because it shows what we have to do to save our nation, which is basically to go to war against the left who controls our colleges and all these other institutions. This is, just tells you all you need to know. Convicted spy from communist Cuba says he was radicalized against the U.S. while attending prestigious universities. A former U.S. ambassador to Bolivia, who was recently sentenced to 15 years in federal prison, has attributed his radical political beliefs to his college education. Manuel Roca, who has been arrested and convicted as a spy for the Cuban government, recently said in a statement that his education at American universities was what caused his radicalization. Roca, who is now 73 years old, wrote in a statement to a federal judge on April 12th that during his formative years in college, he was heavily influenced by the radical politics of the day. My deep commitment at that time to radical social change in the region led me to eventual betrayal of my oath of loyalty to the United States during my 2 decades in the State Department. How many other guys like this are in the State Department? Yeah, like half of them who we need to purge. They need to be gone under Trump. Roca received his BA from Yale in 1973, in addition to master's degrees from Harvard in 1976 and Georgetown in 1978. On April 12th, Roca was sentenced to 15 years in prison for his acts of espionage against the United States on behalf of communist Cuba. In his statement, Roca also said that he is attempting to move past the radicalization of his younger years. I know that my actions have caused great pains to my family, former colleagues, and closest friends. I ask them all for their understanding and their forgiveness. They need to know I am deeply and sincerely sorry. U.S. District Judge Beth Bloom, who sentenced Rocha, referred to him as an enemy in the United States and fined him $500,000 plus 15 years in prison. This action exposed one of the highest-reaching and longest-lasting infiltrations of the United States government by a foreign agent, Attorney Merrick Garland said after Rocha's arrest in December. We allege that for over 40 years, he served as an agent of Cuba. Yeah, and we didn't catch him for 40 years because we didn't want to catch him because there's lots of communists in our government. Go look at what Comer's saying about the infiltration of our government. At least this guy was caught. And at least you know when we say we've got to purge our universities, we've got to stop funding them. Great news that's been coming out about, you know, I've talked to you forever. Don't go to college. Go to trade school. You know, learn a trade. You'll make more money and not pay anything for it. You know, you'll start making money right away. We got to get this idea that going to college is worth it. It's not, unless you're in very specific areas like engineering. Okay, but with AI coming and what you're going to be able to learn on your own, we got to defund the college Marxist, you know, conveyor belt. Defund them, crush them like a grape. Send all those Marxists out. Let them go to trade school. Let them get their lily white hands a little dirty. Yeah, it'd be good for them. All right. So now on to some more good news, which I'm sure you didn't hear because nobody wants to talk about it. High Court, okay, 9-0 ruling. Lowers bar for filing anti-DIA discrimination lawsuits. Wow, what is this about? What's this about? A low-profile case, which I had not heard of until it was decided on Wednesday by the Supreme Court, could have big implications for employers' diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. Muldrow versus City of St. Louis was a case about a female police officer who alleged that she was transferred from one department to another because of her sex. She argues that the transfer violated Title VII, of the Civil Rights Act, which forbids race, color, religion, sex, or national origin discrimination with respect to employment, compensation terms, conditions, or privileges. She lost in the lower court because she could not show that the transfer caused her significant harm. The lower court held that the transfer did not result in a diminution in her title, salary, or benefits and caused only minor changes in her working conditions. A unanimous Supreme Court reversed that, holding that any harm, whether significant or insignificant, satisfies Title VII. Writing for the court, Justice Elena Kagan said that the policewoman does not have to show that the harm incurred was significant or serious or substantial or of any similar adjective. Meaning, it was done for sexual reasons. It's because she was a woman. The opinion covers a lot more. The takeaway is that the policewoman gets to sue, and so do a lot of other people, and not just over sex discrimination or transfers. Title VII applies to all compensation, terms, conditions, and privileges of employment. If you have been fired, transferred, denied a bonus, or forced to attend or excluded from a training program like DEI, critical race theory program, mentorship program, or a retreat on the basis of your race, sex, or religion, you can now sue. And now you need not prove that you suffered any significant sort of harm. As Justice Brett Kavanaugh explained in his concurring opinion, if there is no floor on the amount of harm you must suffer, then the harm requirement is satisfied by any change in money, time, satisfaction, schedule, convenience, commuting costs or time, prestige, status, career prospects, interest level, perks, professional relationships, networking opportunities, effects on family obligations, or the like. The ruling applies to sex-based transfers like the policewoman, but it also applies to many corporate DEI programs. This is the green light. This is if you did not get the promotion, but someone black or a woman or gay got the promotion, you need to sue. Sue, baby, sue. And then write to me and tell me that you did sue. And then When you win, take some of the money you win and give it to the We the People Convention so we can continue to fight the fight. But this is how the left has done it for years, and now you can too, based on this ruling that you didn't hear about. Wow. This is a big deal. This is damn good news. All of you have been pushed aside through this crazy leftist nonsense and denied access to the courts, now have access to the courts. We will certainly post this article on our podcast page, and I hope you will share it with everyone you know who's ever been discriminated based on being a white guy, okay? Based on being a Christian, based on anything. Now you can sue and win. Wow. Big news. This is another thing that I didn't know was going on. It's the SCOTUS, man. Donald Trump. Man, when he gave us these Supreme Court justices, where would we be without them? Where would we be without them? Now, they still frustrate us sometimes, but holy cow, what a difference. What a difference it makes. And we said that when Trump did it, but man, now we're starting to see it for real. Look at this story. Supreme Court rejects Black Lives Matter appeal, holds leader liable for violence, right? We keep talking about, you know, they're putting the January 6th political prisoners in jail, but BLM could burn the city down and nothing happens. Well, something just happened. On Monday, the Supreme Court of the United States rejected an appeal from a leader of the Black Lives Matter movement who was found liable for one of the followers violently attacking a police officer. As Fox News reports, far-left activist DeRay McKeeson was sued in 2016 by a Baton Rouge police officer who remained a nameless John Doe for the case after the officer was injured by a protester who threw a rock-like object at him and hit him. The attack led to the officer losing several teeth and suffering a brain injury. The officer sued McKeeson, who organized the protest on the basis that McKeeson should have known that the event would become violent as other similar riots had become violent. The pattern was set. Out-of-state protesters representing BLM fly into town, gather, block a highway, engage and entice police, loot and damage property, injure bystanders, and injure police. The officer's lawyer wrote in their brief, by July 9, 2016, when McKeeson organized the Baton Rouge protest riot, he had no reason to expect a different outcome, that police will be injured. Last June, the Fifth Circuit of Appeals ruled that the case could proceed, determining that the officer had successfully proven that McKeeson directed his own tortious activity, which led to the creation of the dangerous environment. The Fifth Circuit also ruled McKeeson had incited violence due to organizing and directing a protest, such that it was likely that a violent confrontation with police would result, meaning they did the protest with the intention of having the police have to confront them so they could create the riot. Lawyers for the far-left ACLU, right, again, who are defending the McKeeson in the case, allege the lawsuit is a violation of his First Amendment rights. But see, we don't have a First Amendment right to protest at the Capitol on January 6th, but the BLM people had First Amendment rights. Calling the Fifth Circuit decision directly at odds with the Supreme Court precedent, the ACLU lawyers claim that the decision would chill classic First Amendment-protected activity nationwide. Yeah. In Monday's decision, the Supreme Court declined to take up the case, essentially upholding the Fifth Circuit Court's ruling. Justice Sotomayor issued a separate statement declaring that the court expressed no views about the merits of the McKeeson case. Case closed. He's liable for the injuries to the police officer. Yes. So let's see what the sentence says later. We'll try to follow up. And then I'm going to close, folks, this last story, because you just got to love it. For those of you who are new to the podcast, last year at this time, we were begging and we spent a lot of your donation money to try to convince Ron DeSantis not to run for president against Donald Trump, but to become his vice presidential nominee. We ran a full-page ad in the Miami Herald that cost our organization like $12,000 to explain the reasons why he should have done that. And he didn't. And he ran and made a fool out of himself in his run for president and lost millions of dollars. And it's just disappointing because we are convinced, I am convinced, that there should be nobody but Ron DeSantis as vice president because he's a successful governor. was a successful congressman. He would be perfect to help Trump get the legislation through the Congress we need to do in Trump's only remaining term, and then run for president for 8 more years to completely destroy the Marxists and completely clean out the deep state. I still believe that. Now, there was a breakthrough where DeSantis actually held a fundraiser for Trump in Florida like last week. So I don't know. I mean, Trump's still talking about he's got to have a woman or a black or whatever. No, no. He needs to run DeSantis, and here's why. Here you go. All right. And remember, this is after DeSantis already passed the law against squatting in Florida, right? And every time any major issue comes up, bam, he's right on it. Look at this. DeSantis signs bill mandating communism education in Florida public schools. You got to love this. You got to love this. Set to help students withstand indoctrination in colleges, Governor Ron DeSantis signed a bill requiring the education of dangers and evils of communism in Florida public schools Wednesday. In addition to creating a museum on the history of communism and an institute within Miami-Dade College, Senate Bill 1264 creates new standards on existing communism history instruction guidelines. Instructional topics will include the history of communism in the United States, atrocities committed in foreign countries under communism, comparative discussion of political ideologies, and the increasing threat of communism in the United States and its allies through the 20th century, as defined in the bill's text. Bill also seeks to guide instruction based on the input of people and organizations who were negatively affected by communism. All the people from Cuba and Eastern Europe and stuff who lived under communism and now want to tell you about it. It is vitally important that every student learns about the dangers of communism, said Florida Education Commissioner Manny Diaz Jr. in a press release Wednesday. I know firsthand the evils of that communism brings, and I am proud to stand by Governor DeSantis as he signs this legislation to ensure Florida remains the bastion of freedom. Signing the bill at a press conference in Hialeah, which is 74% Cuban, DeSantis referenced the 1961 Bay of Pigs invasion, a failed invasion supported by the CIA that occurred 63 days before the dates of the press conference. The press conference was held at Assault Brigade 2506 Honorary Museum, which honors participating members of the Bay of Pigs invasion. Regarding the Communism History Museum, the bill mandates from the Florida Direct Department of State to coordinate with the Federal Department of Education to submit a proposal to lawmakers to create a museum on the history of communism by December 1st, by December 1st of this year. Establishing the Institute for Freedom in the Americas at Miami-Dade College, the bill tasks the institute with preserving the ideals of free society and promoting democracy in the Americas, as stated in the bill's text. The truth will set us free, DeSantis said. We will not allow our students to live in ignorance, nor be indoctrinated by communist apologists in schools. To the contrary, we will ensure students in Florida are taught the truth about the evils and dangers of communism. Oh my goodness gracious. Why isn't your governor doing that? Why didn't the U.S. Congress? Why isn't there a museum in Washington, D.C.? There's all these other museums in Washington, D.C., but Ron DeSantis did it. And folks, for our members in Florida, we got a ton of members in Florida, thousands, okay? I'm begging you to please call your state senators and House members in Florida and thank them in the name of the We the People Convention. Say, I'm calling as a member of the We the People Convention to thank you for working with Governor DeSantis in such a well-coordinated way, because I got news for you. What other state can do these things so quickly? DeSantis isn't doing this alone. These legislatures are doing it with him. Oh my gosh. They're heroes. They're heroes. I'm so pleased. Florida members, I'm asking you guys. So I've had a lot of state things, you know, the Kansas people and different people. But we need to reward people who do good. You can't just bitch all the time. So thank you. Thank you so much to Ron DeSantis and the legislature in Florida for standing up for America and doing something but talk. They're not just talking. DeSantis acts. I will keep praying. I don't know if you will join me but I will keep praying that God will influence President Trump and that he will pick Ron DeSantis as his vice president and that DeSantis will do it. I'm begging you. Join me in that prayer. All right. Going to close up the podcast. Want to thank those of people who, who've donated to the 2024 Victory Fund. Fund the fight. Go to freedomforallpac.org, freedomforallpac.org, and make your donations. This is what we're going to use to fight the fight all over the country to elect Donald Trump and to make sure that we improve, we win the Senate and that we win the House. We've got lots of work to do. It's going to cost money. We appreciate your donations. We really do. As I close the podcast, I want to remind you that you need to tell people about this broadcast. You need to let people know. We need to share this news, because how many people knew about DeSantis? How many people you think knew about, the Supreme Court rulings about suing for DEI? They didn't. How many people know about this Title IX change and what's behind that? You get news here. You don't get anywhere else. I make that claim, and I think we live up to it. So tell people about it so that they will help us act, right? The more people know, the more people will act on what we're asking them to act on. And if you have questions or concerns, if I'm wrong about something, write to me at info@wethepeopleconvention.org, and we'll fix it. If I'm wrong, I'll fix it, okay? But most of all, please, please, watch this video immediately after this podcast. Go watch this video about how combination of smartphones and social media is destroying our youth and therefore our future and our country. And then see how to fix it. He tells you what to do, and do it. Do it with your kids. Start a campaign in your school said, "We're first. We took away our kids' smartphone and gave them a flip phone." Right? Take the actions he says. As grandparents, share this with your kids and your grandkids. And if you're older and you don't think it pertains to you, what does then? If we won't protect our children, we don't deserve to survive. They're under attack. This is not an accident. He spells it out. Mike, this thing is so good. This video is so good. And it's not political at all. It's all science-based. Please, I'm begging you, watch it. Share it. I want to see thousands and thousands of more views on our website of that video than we normally get, because you're making people watch it. And then you're acting. Write to me. And tell me how you're acting. It's important. This is how you make a real difference. I mean it. This is how you make a real difference. You all want to do that. I hear it all the time. It's not always just electing candidates. It's taking action in your local in your family and in your community to fix this. And we need to pass laws. And I'm going to pursue this in Ohio. To pass laws that prohibit media companies from giving social media to anyone under 16, from phone companies from distributing it with big fines. We need to fight and win this fight. So I hope that in itself was worth watching this podcast. I really hope you feel that way. So we're going to break now. God willing, you'll be back next week and I'll be back next week. I hope so. I hope you have a good week. Spread the good news. Don't just have the bad news. Plenty of people want to tell you the bad news. There's lots of good news in this podcast. And our chapters player, our new chapters player, which is available on Sundays, because it takes time for them to go through the video and break it out. You can just watch individual stories and you can share them. Okay? The videos are just one section. So utilize that tool. Use the share links on our page to send out the articles. But keep fighting. Be a happy warrior. Have a great week. All right? You've been watching the We the People Convention News and Opinion Podcast. My name is Tom Zawistowski, and I'm sure glad that you joined us today. And God willing, we'll both be back next week. God bless you and God bless America.
Yeah.